Well, welcome everyone to day two of the Fearless Woman of Faith 28-day challenge. Wow, that seems like a big marathon, but you know what? It is going to be charged with so much inspiration, empowerment, and just amazing women. Like today, I'm so excited to have Michelle Schaefer as my guest today. So for those who don't know Michelle, Michelle is a mom. She's a grandma. She is a seven-figure earner in the world of business. She's been in the network marketing industry for 2 decades. As well as that, she is a two-time author. We're going to talk a little bit today about some of the content in one of her books. As well as she is the CEO and founder of Girl Power Alliance, which is a movement that is sweeping the globe of raising up fearless women to be in the marketplace. And I'm sure I forgot some things, but I know she's also a beautiful, beautiful soul. And Michelle, I don't know if you realize this or remember this, but there's a few things that you and I discovered since I've known you that we have in common.
What are they?
We share a birth date.
We have the same birthday?
The same birthday. And we both love sushi.
I love sushi. I only get it like on my birthday.
Well, we'll have to change that. So that's so cool. Well, Michelle, thank you so much for coming on today. And I'd love it if we would start out by giving us a little bit of a backdrop of some of your journey in the business world and a little bit of what that looked like for you and how it kind of brought you to where you are today.
Yeah, thank you. And thank you. I feel like I talk about you every day. I think you are a spectacular woman of God, just a tremendous example for women in business, just your countenance, the way you lead. And I just love you. So thank you for inviting me to be a part of this.
Thank you so much.
I was thinking about this the other day because I read a question in a book. Actually, it was a podcast I was listening to, and a question was posed to the guest, and he said, when did you know you were like a leader, like you had leadership qualities? And I listened to the answer of the guest on the podcast, and I asked myself the question. I was like, when did I think that maybe I was like a leader? And I remembered back to when I was in what is now called middle school. It was junior high. We called it junior high. Mm-hmm. And it was grades 7, 8, 9. And then in the town that I lived in, 4 junior highs fed into 1 high school or 3. And so I was running to take a student council office in high school as a 9th grader. So mm-hmm. I would have been a freshman in like regular high school, but back then that's how we did it. And in order to run for office, I had to give a speech at my own school in front of the 9th grade class. And then I also had to be taken on a bus to all 3 of the different schools.
Wow.
And I as I look back, I won that office. But as I look back, I think that was a time where I realized like I had the ability to influence people because they didn't know me. And then you're going to like rival schools. Mm-hmm. And I remember standing up in front of the auditoriums and thinking to myself, like, I could do this. Like, I could do this. I could talk in front of people. And I liked it. But my journey in high school ended early. I got pregnant at the age of 16. I live in California. I took the high school proficiency, which is different than a GED, because I wanted to go directly to college. So it was basically like testing out of high school with the proficiencies that are required of a senior graduate. So I had my daughter when I was 16 years old. I married her father. A couple of years later, I had my son. So by the time I was 19, I had 2 kids. And prior to getting pregnant, I wanted to be all the things. Like I thought mm-hmm. I will be a journalist. I loved to write. I knew I was going to write a book. I thought maybe I would go to school to be a lawyer because I loved arguing for the underdog and fighting for people that needed advocacy. And I also thought maybe I'd be an actor. So all these things I didn't know. Then, you know, I have a child and all of that just got pushed to the side. I do know this about me though. I always had a hunger for learning. Mm-hmm. So going to school sounded great to me where other people were like, oh, they didn't want to go to college. I really wanted to go to college because I had a hunger for learning. And by the time I was 21, I was divorced with 2 kids. So no college education. I went to 1 semester at that point, 1 semester of college. And I thought I'll be a teacher. And so went to this semester of college while I was working, I was waiting tables. And I did a little bit of the math and I thought, that's going to take me too long, like really long. And by the time I'm done, I will only be making just barely above what is considered like poverty level income in California. So I said, I have to rethink my whole process. So I believe that I have always in my brain was an entrepreneur because I never wanted to fit into any box that kind of was put in front of me.
Wow. Okay. So that's a snapshot of how you emerged. So how did that then work into you becoming an entrepreneur? Did you move into it quickly or was that a process?
So it wasn't quick. Even though in my mind, I always kind of thought of great business ideas, but then, you know, I'm a child with children. How am I going to start that? Yeah. So I feel like my mom kind of set the tone for me to get involved in the beauty business because as soon as I could reach the back of her hair, she had me cutting her hair with like kitchen scissors. And I kind of always played with people's hair and makeup all through as like my whole childhood in even into high school, I did people's hair and makeup. I didn't do it well. I didn't know what I was doing. And I had a friend who was doing my hair and she always said, you know, you'd be a great hairdresser, just personality wise. And so I started talking to her about what she earned as a hairdresser, because now I'm a single mom. So that was at the utmost of importance to me. Like how much are you making? That was the big factor for me. And time, obviously. I knew that part of the reason I wanted to be a teacher was I would be on the same schedule as my kids. So I kind of thought in my mind at that age. After talking with this woman and she said, I'll train you. And I looked and if I went full time, it would take me about a year to go through school and then you have to get trained. So I figured about a year and a half. That was way faster than 4 or 5 years of college. And I knew I could make more right out of the gate. So I put myself through school to become a cosmetologist. It took me 2 years, not one, because I worked full time and I had these little babies. And so I was on their schedule. And then when I started that business, the average at the time, you're talking over 20 years ago now, but at the time, the average hairdresser in the United States made between 28 and 38,000 a year. And, you know, that was not enough for me. I built a full-time clientele and within a year, I was making six figures a year. And so I knew that a couple of things I saw about myself right away, that if an opportunity was available for me to make money, that I was willing to work as hard as I needed to reach that financial goal, number one. Number two, I was the only girl in cosmetology school of about 200. I was the only one that worked full time of 200 students. So I knew that I had maybe grit that other people didn't have. I was willing to sacrifice things that other people didn't have. So this kind of gave me confidence that like whatever I actually wanted to do, I could do. Mm-hmm. And so I had kind of these things going into, building that business standing behind the chair.
Wow. I mean, I'm just thinking about the courage because I'm just thinking about as a single mom, normally you'd want to have a stable income. You'd want to be secure, you know, all of those factors come into play, but you just stepped into this arena that required you to take risk and to really believe that, okay, I can do this. And one of the things that I heard you say that I think is so key is, and maybe you can comment on this in terms of becoming that fearless woman to believe that it can be done, is that you went all in. It's like you said, I am going to do whatever it takes to make this work. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. Well, I look at my life and the fact that I was a mother so young, and I always had a bigger purpose than just for myself. My purpose was always wrapped around taking care of my children. Now, because I was a teen mom, I had a little bit of this kind of attitude of like, I'm not going to be a statistic. My kids are not going to suffer. I'm not going to be. And this is not to put down anybody that has used public assistance or anything. Praise God, it's available for people that need it. But I had this thing about me, like, I'm going to make it. I'm going to make it. And I'm not going to be like everybody thinks I'm going to be, because everybody thought I basically threw my life away. I mean, I was an honor roll student. I was the captain of the cheerleading squad. I was, you know, was on the student council. And then now I threw my life away and I was like, no, you'll see. I'm going to do great. I'm going to make something out of my life. I'm going to prove to myself, to other people, to my kids that I wasn't, you know, that. So I always thought in numbers. My mind thinks in math. And because mm-hmm. we needed money to live, that's how I looked at everything. How many hours would I have to do at this job to make this much money? And is this the amount of money that I need or want to make to have the kind of a life that I want? And nothing lined up for me. Everything that I looked at, I was like, this, I'm going to work this many hours and only make this much. I don't like that. Because some jobs, you don't even have the opportunity to actually make more. It's just not even there. So in doing hair, number one, I could work as many hours as I could, like physically, as many hours in a day that I could, as long as I could physically do that, if I could build the clientele. Number two, I wanted to charge. I was in control. What has always felt like security to me is what I can be in control of, what I can be in charge of, versus letting somebody else tell me, here's where you're going to work, here's how you're going to work, and here's what you're worth. I never liked that. I still don't like it.
I love that. I love that. I can always see the fire in you that God put in you from day one. You know, there's this grit. And some women would say, well, yeah, but I don't have that. So I can't do what Michelle did. So what would you say to women like that?
Well, first of all, I think that is a lie from the pit of hell, because if you look all throughout the entire Bible, this is our book. Like, these are our people. These are the stories we read about. These are the things that we use to help us grow. And if you look at every single story throughout the entire Bible, these people struggled and suffered tremendously, hardships, obstacles, things that seemed like insurmountable. And time after time again, partnered with who God says we are, they were able to overcome. And so I never, and I have to give props to my mom again, because as I was growing up, and I talk about this in RLA, I think you've heard me say this, but as I was growing up, whatever it was that I wanted to attempt, my mom's response always to me was, well, then you'll do it. Like, I think I'm going to try out for the school play. Oh, well, then you'll get it. And so I had embedded in me from very, very young that, like, if there was anything that I wanted to attempt, then of course it would just, like, I would be able to make it happen. And it wasn't until I was actually in my 20s that I actually had the cognizant thought of, you mean just because I want something, it doesn't just happen. I can't just make it happen. But it was embedded in me. And I just, you know, I believe that with God, all things are possible. You just have to figure out how, and maybe tweak it. Maybe it doesn't look exactly the way that you thought that it was, you know, it was going to look. But if you can be flexible, if you can work hard, and if you can partner with God, literally there's nothing impossible.
That is so good. You know, in your book, The Residual Life, which is right here, this is a beautiful book, How to Build a Network Marketing Empire. And this comes from years of experience. And you talk about, so we're going to fast forward here a little bit, because you've spent 2 decades in entrepreneurship in the field of network marketing. And in here, you talk about how that network marketing is not for the faint of heart, and that it does require a measure of entrepreneurship and emotional intelligence. But you also talk about how your faith wildly impacted your journey and your success. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah. So I've kind of done everything backwards. Everything that I've done is kind of like, I began somewhere that I kind of began with the end in mind, and everything that I did and figured it out on the way up. Here I had worked so hard. I mean, I worked so hard to just become a cosmetologist, a licensed cosmetologist. And then I stood behind the chair for almost a decade building this really, really very successful business. I had hundreds and hundreds of clients, and then I felt like I was done. All of a sudden, it wasn't this slow burn. It was like all of a sudden one day I felt like I was done. I was like, I'm done with this. Something else has to come. I had met my husband, and he was in the network marketing profession. I heard about network marketing. I never knew anybody before I met my husband that made a career out of it. I honestly thought network marketing was this little hobby thing that stay-at-home moms did. That was my impression of network marketing. And then when I met Bobby, he was making professional income. And so I was like, okay, remember I told you, I think in numbers. So here I was making great money at the salon. I topped out probably, almost 20 years ago, but about $130,000 a year. That was great money for me. Really great money. But I was working 50, sometimes 60 hours a week to do that on my feet. And here I meet Bobby and he's making like way more than I made and he never worked. So I thought, okay, this is intriguing to me, but I didn't want to walk away just yet. It took about 2 years before I finally said, okay, I think I'm going to do this. And so when I told people everybody thought I was nuts. Why would you walk away from this huge clientele that you've worked so hard to build? Why would you take a risk? Network marketing, that's scammy. No, you know, that's one of those things and that's unstable. That's all these things. But I was so desperate to create freedom in my life. Here's the thing about, I think, making money. I think you can make money anywhere. Mm-hmm. I think you can pick any profession. I think you can pick any company. I think if you have that drive and you have kind of a can-do attitude and you're willing to, you know, put in the time and the effort, I think you can make money doing anything. What was even more important to me than money was the time. Mm-hmm. How can I make more money but work less time? This is the dream. I need to make more money and work less. Doesn't everybody want that?
Yeah.
But I actually saw that as possible in network marketing. So I ventured out, had my husband, he was my mentor, which was an amazing mentor because he already had built something. So I had somebody to learn from that had been where I wanted to go.
Mm-hmm.
He had made money that I wanted to, make. And so number one, number two, this burning desire inside of my gut that told me, like, it felt otherworldly. It felt more than just a desire. It was a desperate, like I'm being called to come home. Mm-hmm. I need to figure out whatever I have to do to come home. And so I, you know, just poured myself into learning that profession. And I remember I would go to these. So I was working in the salon when I started. I had a toddler, a middle schooler. I think my son was in the sixth grade. Or maybe he was in the seventh grade. He was in the seventh grade. And my oldest daughter was a freshman in high school. She was in ninth grade. And so I'd go to work in the salon in the morning and I would go do presentations in people's homes at night. And I remember driving to because we didn't have this. I had to drive to people's homes. Every single night I would pray this prayer, God, like compound my time that I'm leaving my family. Because I always wanted to be home.
Yeah.
Here I was being gone even more than I wanted to be gone, you know, to start. But I would pray as I was driving to those homes, Lord, compound my time, make it worth it. If I have to be away from my family to do this, God, please, please make my efforts count, like double and triple them. And so I had so much confidence that if I just committed it to the Lord and I did the work, I believed somehow, some way it was going to turn out in my favor.
Wow. I'm just reading some of the comments here that people are making as they're listening here and just reposting some of the things that you've said. So Michelle, the other part of this is the aspect of being like your inspiration. Do you find that as a woman, for example, pioneering in the network marketing, which you have done, and you've been very successful in that industry. And, you know, it has its negative connotations. Many people have negative experiences and they paint it with a broad brush. But now you are actually doing something quite remarkable that I think is really a demonstration of being a fearless woman of faith, is that you are pioneering a movement of raising up women to be voices of influence in the marketplace, and you're using the network marketing model. Well, God has directed you in this way, but you're pioneering something because you're doing it differently. And I know within the Girl Power Alliance, you talk about you're changing the narrative. Can you talk a little bit about that and why do you need to change the narrative? And what is it about that narrative that needs to be changed?
Yeah, thank you. First of all, I just want to say this, like the name of your conference here is a Fearless Woman of Faith. I just have to say this. I have never done anything without fear. I have felt horrified and just did it anyway. I think that's the definition of courage. So for me, I don't feel fearless because I feel the fear for sure. I feel the emotion. all the things, but I continue to move forward. I won't let fear stop me, because I believe that fear comes from lack of faith. Fear comes from lies of the enemy. Fear comes from other people's influence and their voice, not the voice of God. So yeah. I just want to say that. And for, if you're listening, you're thinking like, man, I wish I could be like that, but you can, because there is not, like, I went to one semester of college. I would venture to guess almost everybody that's watching this, and I can only see a couple of names, yeah, but almost everybody has more actual education, like technical education, than I do, and probably more experience in certain areas that I do. I just think that, I have been completely willing to fail and fall on my face, and I tried to do it fast. That's one thing. I wanted to fail fast. Like I realized, like, trial by fire in everything in my whole entire life. So let's get the trial done quickly. Let's run as fast as we can toward the thing, figure it out as we go, and keep going through it. And I think that we as human beings, our natural inclination is to prolong that because you're so scared of failure. I have never, ever struggled with fear of failure. I think that's a lie from the pit of hell. To me, the only failure is not attempting. Because every time I did something and it didn't turn out the way that I wanted, I came out ahead because I learned something powerful that I would use in the next, like, part of my journey, in the next phase of my journey. So I just wanted to say that because I'm definitely not fearless. I am filled with fear. And even here with Girl Power Alliance, it has been, again, another, like, what looked like to the outside world, like, why are you doing this? I had been very successful with my husband in the network marketing profession. We'd earned $2 million. I was really at the top of my game after building with one company for a number of years, huge team. And all of a sudden, kind of like it was when I was doing here, I was like, I think I'm done with this. And that scared me like crazy, because this was our full income, no income from anything else. And so I was like, I don't know what you're doing, God, but please, like, you know, help me to learn whatever direction you want me to go quickly, so it doesn't destroy all that we had worked so hard to build. And it definitely wasn't a overnight. I knew exactly what he wanted me to do. I would follow what I felt in my heart was his nudging, and I would take a step in that direction. And as I took a step in that direction, then I would get what I felt was another nudge to move further or to move left or right. And I just want to talk about this. When I first began feeling that feeling, I thought for sure I was being called all the way out of network marketing. I had experienced amazing things, but I've also experienced all the junk that most people hate and why most people leave and talk negatively about the profession. I have had malicious uplines, which is the people that would enroll me into the company that did terrible things. I had, you name it. And between my experiences and Bobby, who had been in the profession 10 years before me, literally we kind of saw and experienced all the bad and all the good. I saw all the shysters. I saw the way people manipulated people. Part of the reason I never wanted to talk about God was because I watched people manipulate people in network marketing by claiming to be Christians. I'm not saying they weren't, but I watched them manipulate people through this vernacular of being a person of faith and just lead people down the wrong path and be completely motivated by their own gain, using their position as a person of faith and leadership to make people do what they wanted to do. So I never wanted to talk about faith because I didn't want to be that.
Yeah.
You know, so I saw all the things. And when I began founding Girl Power Alliance in 2020, I was like, God's calling me out of it, and began building it with all these great things, creating a community for women where they could be really proud of being a follower of Jesus and called to the marketplace, and where we could grow together and encourage each other. And there was something a little bit missing for me. And I didn't know what it was. Bobby would ask me all the time, what's the thing? I was like, I don't know yet. I don't have it. Well, about a year in, was it a year in? 20? Yes. About a year in, I felt like the Lord actually was like, you can have it back. Network marketing.
Wow.
Because I had literally pushed it out of my mind and my heart, like, for a year and a half. Nope. This is not what he wants me to do. And kind of, again, all at once, I was like, wait a minute, are you like actually giving this thing back to me that I've loved the profession, because in its purest form, it's just referrals, right? I mean, you're talking about affiliate marketing is booming right now. Influencer marketing is booming. That's what network marketing, we're the original influencer marketing. We're the original affiliate marketing. And I thought, but Lord, if you're going to give this back to me and this is what you're wanting, like I can do this, then it has to be different than all these other things. And the question that I prayed about and asked many people before I even took my first steps into morphing what I had already built into a network marketing company is, can I build a network marketing company based on the foundations of faith, keeping all the ego and all the yucky stuff that I had experienced out of the company and still have it be a wildly successful company? Well, there's no company for me to look at that has done it. So, you know, just pioneering, changing the language, change the way we treat people, changing some of the policies and procedures. So, you know, it's happening in real time. You've been here for the whole thing almost.
I will attest that I've been honored to be a part of this community and witness that truly there is a fierceness of really creating this culture, fierceness in a good way, to protect what God is wanting to build here in terms of the culture of no competition in the kingdom and just really honoring God. And really that's to the compliment of those who are leading like yourself, Michelle, and the co-founders, that together you have that heart and that mind to bring glory to God and to really create that space for women to thrive in who they're called to be. And it's really beautiful. It's really beautiful. I want to say something that you just talked about, and thank you for sharing that, because I'm sure that listeners would be wondering, well, you know, she seemed like she was fearless all of her life. But what you said there was in terms of you felt fear, you feel fear, but yet you took action, you took steps. And I think that this is a key that is often missing. There's many who, and maybe you can speak to this, they're kind of sitting on the sidelines, waiting for something to happen before, or waiting for them to feel courage or confident to step.
Yeah, that doesn't happen.
Not in my experience either.
It's never happened in my experience. There's a line in the movie We Bought a Zoo. Did you see that movie? I think it's based on a true story, literally, of a family, a guy that bought a zoo. And there's a line in the movie that the guy says to his brother, sometimes all you need is 30 seconds of insane courage and your whole life can change. Mm-hmm. I kind of feel that way about most things. Like, nothing has been handed to me. I have not had I haven't had it easy. It's always been 2 steps forward, like 10 steps back. I have not felt like I had favor. Like, it wasn't like doors opened for me and I met this person and then this wonderful thing happened. Matter of fact, for the bulk of my life, one of my prayers is, God, why does it feel like all I'm ever doing is like the salmon trying to jump up the waterfall? Like, can we just go with the stream for once? Can we just, but that has not been my life. It never has. But I think that for me, the thing that scares me the most is going backwards and, or, you know, not trying. Like, if I never tried, whatever it is, even if it didn't work, even if this just, for some reason, it just didn't work, what we're doing at GPA, I don't think that's going to happen. But if that happened, what would haunt me the most is if I never actually went for it, because I feel like what God is looking for is for people to trust him enough that you are willing to like put yourself out there for him to show up. If we just play it safe all the time, there's no need for his divine intervention, because you didn't really do anything that he needs to come in and like give you his divine power. I do big, scary things that I am not equipped to do. And I'm like, okay, God, I think you're telling me to do this. You better show up or it's going to be a disaster. And because of that, every time I did that, feeling fear, my faith grew. Mm-hmm. And then I tried another thing. I was like, okay, that didn't work. We're going to try this. But my faith grew, because what he has always done for me, even in the things that didn't work out, was it was almost like it opened a door to the next thing. So this didn't work out, but then my vision expanded or my vision changed. I was like, okay, I'm glad that happened, because now I can go over here, which is where he really wanted me. Does that even make sense? It might not.
It makes sense to me. I totally, but it reminds me also in your book, you talk about this concept of fearless failure, where there's a sense seeing failure not as a stopping point, but as an opportunity to keep moving forward into more and more opportunity of growth and learning. Is that how you would describe it?
For sure. I to me, the word failure holds no value almost. Like it's not like so many people, I'm just so afraid to fail. I don't have that feeling at all in me. There's nothing about, oh, I'm afraid it won't work out. Well, I mean, it might not work out, but I'm not afraid to attempt it. And I realize that it might not work out. I mean, it might not, but guess what? It might. It might be amazing, or it might open a door to the next thing. And so I feel like if we could, the enemy holds people so stuck. So many of the people I bet that are watching this right now, you have something inside of you. And you have been so afraid to take the first step. And you are handing over your destiny to the enemy. I don't want him to have any control over my destiny. If I fall flat on my face, it's going to be because I attempted something really big and the enemy did not keep me back.
You know, that's so true. The Lord, you know, brought me this revelation years ago where it's like whatever we come under, we give authority to.
Yes.
And when we bow to the spirit of fear and to the fear, even though we don't realize it by our giving into it, we are actually coming underneath that authority, and we're giving authority to the spirit of fear or the author of fear. And so we wonder sometimes, I don't know if you're listening today and you're wondering, why do I feel so stuck? You might want to ask, what are you afraid of? And where do you need to take that step? And I really believe that what you're talking about today, Michelle, is the whole thing of just stepping into a place of faith, even though you have no idea how it's going to turn out. You're just following the lead as you sense the Holy Spirit directing you and trusting that whatever happens, he's going to give you the next step, or he's going to give you what you need to walk it out. And I just want to encourage women today.
You want to say something about that?
Yeah.
I mean, you said something. You said something about they're afraid to step out because they don't know what's going to happen, right? Isn't that the thing that we're all like? I just don't know. So you kind of allow yourself to stay in something that is, and I'm using this word, this very loosely, something secure.
Mm-hmm.
If the last 3 years hasn't opened people's eyes to the fact that what you thought was something secure is not, there's no, that's a lie. There's really no, you know what I'm secure in? Who God is and who I can, what I can accomplish partnered with him, right? That's the only, I'm only secure in that. I can't control what anybody else does. I can only control what I do. That to me feels way more secure than counting on somebody who's got their own agenda at their job and their own things. So I want to just shift hopefully your perspective. Like, you know, there is no such thing as security, in my opinion. The desire for that keeps you stuck. The desire for that, the fear of, oh, it's not going to work out, keeps you stuck. My question that I always ask people, what's going to happen if you don't attempt it? Mm-hmm. Like, what's the cost of not trying for you?
Beautiful. Yeah, that's a great question. And to me, it comes down to freedom, right? It's like, what if we're not free, then something needs to change. So just in the last few minutes that we have left, Michelle, I'd love it if you would touch on a woman in the Bible that maybe either you relate to or inspires you, that we can leave with our audience today to help them to be able to see that this is the will of the Lord for you, to walk in fearless. And like Michelle said, it doesn't mean you're not going to feel the fear. It means that you move forward with your trust in something bigger than yourself, and that is in God, and just walking in obedience. So love it if you would share, and in the last few minutes we have left.
Thank you, Lisa. As I was preparing for this talk, and I knew we were going to be talking about this, I went into the book of Esther and I read all up to chapter 5. And I love the story of Esther. It's an interesting one because I think the reader, we read this, we think Esther was just this woman of faith. She wasn't, doesn't ever in the entire book mention her faith at all. Mm-hmm. Just knew that she was a Jew. That's it. And that she was under her uncle's rule. Well, mm-hmm. Esther was taken. I'm going to go ahead and venture to say, not necessarily against her will, but it wasn't her choosing to be taken into the harem of the king, right? Yeah. To see who he wanted to pick to be his next queen. And if those of you that know the story, there was basically he was like a king's guard who hated her uncle and all the Jews, and he wanted to kill them all because he hated Esther's uncle. So he's like, I don't want to just kill him. I want to kill all their people. And so he had favor with the king. The king put a decree out, going to kill on this certain day all the Jews. Well, Esther was a Jew, but nobody knew. So here it was that they were all going to be killed. And she was so afraid of the consequence of anybody knowing who she was, her true identity, that nobody knew. The king didn't know, the court, nobody knew that she was a Jew. And so she knew on this certain day that all her and all her people were going to be killed. So her uncle says to her, but maybe this is why this circumstance actually happened to you, so that you might be put in a position of power and favor over somebody that might change the destiny of all of our people. And so I love what she says to him. She says, you know, it's against the law to go speak with him unless he calls for me. I could literally be put to death. And the uncle reminds her, but maybe that's why you're there. Like maybe you're here to protect all the people, the Jewish people. And she goes, well, I want everybody to fast for 3 days. I'm going to do it too. And I'm going to have my people fast for 3 days. And then I'm going to go see the king. And you know what? If I die, I die. I just love that fearlessness. And I think that she was probably 14 or 15 years old. So you have this young girl, mm-hmm. put in this world where, you know, she's just a kid, you know, and she's like, listen, I'm going to die anyway. I might as well go for it. And then of course, as the story goes, you know, she was put in that position. She did she did have favor with the king, and the Jewish people were saved, spared again, as so many times through history. And I think that that is a great message for us. She wasn't, she was placed where she was placed because God actually knew what was coming. And she had a heart, she wasn't fearless. She was afraid. She said, like, he could kill me. This is what could happen. Mm-hmm. But you know what? If I die, I die. I'm just going to, like, she was aware of what could potentially happen, and she did it anyway. And I believe that we are living in a time right now that I call it an Esther season in the world, because I believe wherever, whoever's watching this, mm-hmm. wherever you are positioned where you're at for a reason, that there is an impact that you are supposed to have. There is favor that you've already been given, that we're living in a time where wherever we're positioned, it's time for us to say, not necessarily if I die, I die, but I'm going to go for this thing regardless of, like, it's either going to be great or it's not. And I'm going to go for it. And I believe that's the time we're living in right now.
I love that. And I so believe that as well. And I know that that is something that Girl Power Alliance is so resonating with, in terms of just in the whole movement that God is doing on the across the globe. We haven't even talked about that, how God spoke to you about that prophetically. That's for another time. But I do want to say, we will talk about, so for those who are listening, you'll hear more about some opportunities for you to get involved in being able to step into that place and be a voice of influence in a speaking world or leadership capacity. But for now, I'm going to put a link here. It is my affiliate link to Girl Power Alliance, because I believe this is one of the movements that God is using to disciple women across the globe to be their voice, to be like the Esther. Like, I love that part where she said, but it's illegal. I could get killed. How much of what the enemy tries to do to us today to intimidate us by the voice of those things that seem so much bigger, because they threaten our security, they threaten our life, whatever it might be. But when it comes down to, is like, we answer to one person,
yeah.
and that is God. And so thank you so much, Michelle, for your time today and sharing your story. I know it has been inspiration and really empowering for many people as they listen. And if you're listening to the replay, make sure and put your comments down below And what is your takeaway from today? And how are you, what has God spoken to you about what you can do today to become a fearless woman of faith? What step do you need to take today to believe God for something bigger and to bring about his divine purpose? So thank you, everyone. We look forward to seeing you tomorrow. Thanks, Michelle.
Thank you, Lisa. Bye, everybody.